Inside the Cross Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of In the Crease. My name is Dan Abern, contributing writer at Inside Lacrosse, and I am pleased to say that lacrosse season has finally arrived. I'm joined today by...
I'm Kyle Devitt. I'm the gear and lifestyle editor for Inside Lacrosse, and I'm a New England Patriots fan.
Yes, we're recording this post-Super Bowl Monday morning, so Kyle, this is your moment. Say what you got to say.
Listen... All I did last night, the game ended. I don't believe it still. And I just sent out one emoji to everyone in my phone. Dan, I believe you received this emoji. What was it?
I actually did not get it. Oh, I did get it. It was a certain animal. A goat, I believe.
Yes. Ooh. To indicate what?
I'm not exactly sure.
Yes, you are. Say it.
Tom Brady, he's the GOAT? Is that what you're trying to say?
Correct. The greatest of all time.
Is that what you're suggesting?
It is. He's the greatest of all time. There's no argument now. Joe Montana fans, Joe Montana, see ya. It's Brady. So, everybody that hates, keep hating. It's fine. I know the Patriots are the most hated team. I understand it. I am not going to play the role of, like, the jerk New England fan. I'm happy we won. I'm not going to rub it in anyone's face. I can't believe we won. Any New England fan that says they didn't give up at halftime is a liar. I'm going to be honest with you. Like I did, you know, like all that that false bravado stuff. That's not cool. I'm happy we won. Hopefully all the fans can act with a little more class than we usually have. But, I'm happy it happened and I'm psyched. And I'm really, the only thing that's really upset me is the people that are like, oh, the game was fixed. And all the holding calls. It's like,
no, it was not.
Come on.
It was like, not.
Let's be real. I get if you hate it. I understand. Like, I'm not mad at you. But champs is champs. Yep, and that's how it's going to be. Champs. And now we can talk lacrosse. That's it. That's all I wanted to do. I did my little dance for the video portion of this call for Dan. I did a couple karate chops. I'm wearing all Patriots gear. Yes. But that's it. That's it.
All right.
I'm not going to be insufferable. I'm not.
And the Super Bowl definitely did not overshadow what was actually a really good weekend of lacrosse, I thought. Like, we had a bang for an opening weekend.
I mean, can we talk about overtime games?
Yeah.
Like...
You're cursed.
No, it's not a curse. It's a blessing.
Yes.
Blessing. It's a curse for the teams that lose the overtime challenge, but the KD overtime challenge is real. And it started with watching the YouTube stream of UVM Furman.
Yes. With a very interesting live chat. Shout out to everybody in the live chat. But 13-12 Vermont overtime win, or a really gutsy win by the Catamounts. I don't know how half of those assists happened, but quite a game.
Yeah, I the game tying goal, I still don't know how it went in.
Yeah.
It's like one of those things where like you're watching the feed and you're like, did that go in? How did that go in? Because you see his stick, he does it kind of like a toe drag. And then, like, it's almost like his stick gets checked and the ball flies into the net. But I think it was a little more complicated than that. But, I mean, what a game. I mean, you know, Furman looked good. Real good for the first half especially. Little tiny Dodgers whizzing about the field and making plays. I thought the UVM defense looked awful. I thought they put Kaplan, the goalie, out to dry. I think they were over-rotating on all their slides. Their two slides were not there. I mean, we were talking about it kind of while we were watching the game. I was texting you, and, to me, it was pretty obvious that it was just the defense was not adjusting to what Furman was doing, dodging and flicking the ball back, kind of getting rollbacks, open shots, hitting the guy on the wing, especially after the Dodger came and drew two, just popped it down to the wing for, like, an easy shot. A couple of them went near pipe, which means, keeper was a little out of position. We can blame him a little bit, but, overall, a stellar first half for the Paladins. They just, UVM's got too much offense, man. I can't believe they came back the way they did, but at the same time, while I was watching it, I was like, UVM's going to score here.
Yeah, I mean, watching the game, I kind of felt like Vermont was never out of it. We knew how fast they could score. This is a team that's got a proven offense. But the one thing that really drew my eyes was that they could score, but it seemed that getting the ball was difficult. And I think, you know, after watching this the whole weekend of games involving Vermont, that they're going to struggle with the faceoff X a little bit, maybe.
100%. I think we had a discussion about this on Twitter. It's like, what about the faceoffs, though? Yeah. Like, they really needed to shore that part of their game up, for sure. I mean, what do we make of the absence of Ian McKay here?
I that was another thing. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know if it's like an injury. I don't know if it's maybe they just there's a reason he's not on the field. That's, you know, an off the field issue. But two games the first weekend is for him not to play is slightly troubling. We'll see what happens with him. But if he doesn't show up for game three, I think that's when we start asking questions.
I mean, we should say UVM is 2-0, but they won both games in overtime. The second game was against Mercer, and Mercer was beating the bag off him a little bit in the beginning of that game. I saw the halftime score while I was at BU Providence, and just like tweeted a bunch of bear emojis because I don't know if anyone recalls us talking about some of our conference previews, but you know I gave a shout out to Mercer. I think they play
Mercer
hard.
Plays hard.
And, but hey, I know that's such like a hot take, but like Mercer watching them play, hard. Like they really do, you know. Go 100% the whole game.
Yeah, they definitely do. I didn't see much of that game. I only really saw the Vermont, you know, Furman game. But can we talk about Cam Milligan for a second? This dude is bona fide.
He's a monster. He's a monster.
4-4 in this game.
I mean, the other guy, and I, again, while we were watching this, I tried to point this out. Dawes Milchling is a monster. Yeah. He's a monster. He just needs – he's one – you know, we talk about people getting service a lot. We talk about attackmen that need service. Mikey Wynn. We talk about Mikey Wynn. Justin Gooderding's kind of a guy like that. And what we mean by that is like a guy that gets into the right position but needs someone to facilitate his finish. And that sounds like a dig sometimes, but it's not. I don't think that's a dig at all. I think that's a very specific kind of player. A lot of those players are Canadian. But I'm just saying – having one of those guys gives you a leg up on the competition if they don't have one.
Yeah. Anecdote real quick for you. So, Dawes Milchling is from Baltimore. And I told my dad about him, I think, last year. And he's like, Milchling, I played with a guy named Milchling. We called him the Milkman back in the day. So, that's his new nickname.
The Milkman?
The Milkman.
I'm into it. Let's do it.
I'm so into it as well.
Is there a bottle of milk emoji that we can use to accompany all of his
There
highlights?
Is. They have like the glass emoji with the milk. So it's like milkman. Like he's delivering. Awesome. He's going to turn that milk into cheese.
That's a step too far. Milkman delivered was good. Let's just stay there. Let's keep it there. What else we got on tap?
Well, the game of the weekend for you.
That's right.
Providence.
That's right. Ugh. First off,
I have a feeling we got some incendiary takes coming up.
It's not super fire takes, but I will say, first off, I've never been to that Providence Stadium. It's basically brand new. I think it was built 2 years ago. It is gorgeous. It's right next to the hockey arena, full turf. Like, it's got three stories to it. It's unbelievable. There's like a cutout kind of like walkway in between two areas. The press box was amazing and heated, thank God, because it was cold, man. It was cold. It was, I think it was 30 degrees on the faceoff, and I don't think it went above 31 as the game went on. So, you know, shout out to all the guys in D1 lacrosse playing in 30 degree weather. I feel you. I remember not being able to feel my toes for weeks. So, you know, it's a tough thing. And actually, what's tougher is being a coach because you're not running around. And you're just freezing.
Yeah.
So shout to all the coaches that freeze for all of February. It's one of the things we never talk about when we like, you know, give our opinions on games that shouldn't be played in February. We're never like, oh, but the poor coaches. I feel you. Poor coaches.
Yeah, those poor coaches.
Anyway, you know, Providence, it was sloppy to start. It was evident in the first quarter that this was a first game for both teams. There was 10 turnovers in the first quarter combined.
Definitely sloppy.
It was just watching it. I was kind of, you know, I guess it was on a pay stream, so I had a lot of people hitting me up for insight and stream links and stuff. And I was like, "You got to pay for it, man." Like, sorry.
Yep.
But being there in person, watching it, I thought both goalies were outstanding. I think Christian Carson Bannister is one of the best goalies in the Patriot League and maybe a top 10 goalie in the country. And I think Tate Boyd's proved that he is 100% a top 10 goalie in the country with his performance, even though
he
made 12 saves. Carson Bannister made 17. But, you know, the takeaway from this game is not the BU one. I know that's what I wrote and that's what everyone thinks. Yeah. Takeaway from this game is that Providence is for real on both sides of the field. They
look legit, especially on defense.
Well, yes, and that's kind of one of my first takes is that unit of Gerard Newman and James Barclay and Jimmy Cunningham is really a scary proposition for any team to go up against. I'm sure Denver is going to find a way to score on that unit, but I think it's going to be tough for a lot of those, you know, Big East teams to get in there and score more than, you know, 12 goals against that team. And I think when you're looking at that, how that conference stacks out, we're wondering what's going to happen with Denver missing Zach Miller. We're wondering what's going to happen with Marquette with all these, you know, they lost the heart and soul of all their team with all those seniors and graduate players gone. I really think a team like Providence can step up and make that tournament. And they are hosting it. I know I keep harping on that, but talking to coaches after the game, I think you know, Coach Pauly was like incredulous. Like he kind of had the attitude of like, yes, we knew we could win, but wasn't happy with his team. Okay. You know, and that's fair, but the real story of this game, I got tipped off to it by someone on the inside. Sam Talco did not play in this game.
Yeah.
For BU. It would have
been a completely different game if he had played.
It really would have. But I still think Providence would have showed well. Because one of the things they just didn't do was finish, man. Mm-hmm. They just didn't finish the ball. And when you can't finish the ball against a team like BU or a goalie like Carson Bannister, like that's something that's going to cost you every single time. The fact that the game went into double overtime was – I mean, if you watch the game, BU really turned it on in the fourth quarter. And that game-tying goal was like a complete insane like drive to the inside and like really just swallow it and take the hit and shoot. And I think it really, really paid off for them. They rung a shot off the post in the first overtime. Carson Bannister made an elbow save in the first overtime. It was a great game. And I think the other guy that stood out was Kearns for Providence. Had an absolute – maybe goal – this is – for me, it was goal of the weekend. I'm sure there were better goals. But the one that I saw with my own eyes was Kearns' second goal. He caught it off the break and didn't even look and underhand cheesed it to the far pipe. Like, didn't even look and just – it went in. And he turned and just put his arms up. Like, yes, that's a guy who's there to replace Will Mazzone, Providence's leading scorer from last season, and kind of put them in position to win games. So I was really impressed with Providence. BU's offense stuttered a lot, but once they got going, they still made an impact. I thought Providence's goal was to stop Cal Dearth, and they did. He had one goal. He had seven shots, two of them rang off the pipe. But, you know, when you hold basically the best player on the team to one goal, you did your job. You did your job. And your offense just has to score. And they just didn't do it. You know, Coach Gabrielli said it best after the game. They were just a little too young, a little too immature in key situations to score when they needed to.
I mean, yeah, to build off your point, I thought Dearth, obviously a little quiet, 1-for-7 shooting. But I feel like you got to expect a little bit more out of him. He's like Ryan Pauly himself has said that this is an ACC caliber athlete that is playing for your team. And for him to go 1-7 was definitely a little bit of a disappointment. I think, you know, when we came into this game, we really wanted to see, was BU going to take that next step as a program and start really flexing some muscles, so to speak. And I felt like this was kind of a letdown in that regard. So my question to you, I'm going to pose this real quick, is, you know, was this kind of like not the ideal way for BU to start the season? Obviously, it's good to get a win, but like you said, Pauly did not seem very satisfied with his team's performance. What is your take? Was it early season jitters, or should they like really be going back to the drawing board a little bit?
I think it's a totally different team if if Tauco plays. Yeah. Because he keys all their speed strikes. They did not get – I mean, Providence scored two goals in the first quarter. Both of them were fast breaks off a transition. I think Boston's – you know, their biggest problem, and this is like not a good problem to have, by the way, is clearing the ball.
Yeah.
Why can't you clear the ball? I like – I'm one of those people like I don't – there are a couple things I don't have any sympathy for. Teams that can't clear the ball and box penalties in lacrosse. Like if you can't clear the ball – effectively, or you look like your clear was set up by a 5-year-old, like we have problems.
I mean, that's like day one stuff.
It's day one, practice one, we're going to learn a clear. Yeah. And then, you know, good teams practice it all year. I think they need to figure that out. They need to know. The thing about the clear is everyone kind of puts it on the goalie. It's not always on the goalie. It's a whole team effort. It's a whole team effort, but you do need a quarterback for that play, right? And it is a play. That's the thing. Like, it's a play you run over and over that is easy in its execution. But the simplicity of it kind of gets the better of some people. You get so excited after a save, then you see a guy, and you know you're not supposed to throw that pass. You know. But you do it anyway because you want to create something for your team. I think if you go back to the board, back to the basics, and just drop an L clear that works instead of trying to do whatever they're doing. I couldn't even tell what they were doing half the time. Mitty's just streaking up the field, not turning around until they get to the half line. Guys subbing off three guys at a time. Like it just looked messy. And, you know, Providence played it really well. They played a high ride. Almost got caught out, by the way. Tate Boyce almost got caught out of the net with a 10-man ride at one point in the second half. It just missed the cage. So, you know, it's one of those things that where you have to feast or famine that. But I think if Tauco plays in that game, BU cleans up their clearing, I think they're going to run roughshod through the Patriot League. It's just a matter of, like, you need to be able to put your offense in positions to succeed. And one of the things – I'm going to defend Cal Dearth here a little bit. They moved him all around. They moved him everywhere. I mean –
That's definitely fair.
In the man up, he was playing at the top of the 3-3 set, trying to set things up and trying to draw a slide. Providence did a great job of like just kind of like playing baby games and just like faking a jump or hedging, sliding quick, all those things. So, you know, I think if you look at it that way, you know, I both these teams played really well. It sucks that one team has to win in that double OT situation, but it definitely was BU's day.
And we were definitely right. This was one of the sneaky good games of the weekend. So props to us.
Yeah, 100%.
But moving on to other action Saturday, a game that was supposed to be streamed, but due to a water crisis in Chapel Hill, was played in Raleigh. But UNC and UMBC, 17-6, goes to the reigning national champions. And this was an interesting game. I mean, you did not catch up on much of this game.
I saw some highlights, and then I saw a comment that just one word to describe the game, and it was a great word: mollywopped.
Mollywopped.
Okay. Mollywopped. UNC mollywopped.
I mean, that definitely seemed to be the case. They scored right off the bat a goal from Stephen Bones Kelly, I think, within the first 6 seconds of the game. And for me, my impression of this game was that UNC really did hit the ground running, so to speak. You know, you talk about, you know, losing Steve Pontrello to graduation and then Shane Simpson not being enrolled there anymore. People are like, oh, where are they going to initiate their offense from? I think they found it. 21-year-old freshman Justin Anderson. If you don't know why he's a 21-year-old freshman, Jeff Shannon has a great story about how he did a Mormon mission in South America. Go check that out. But he came right into this midfield line. First midfield was their primary dodger, it seemed, and finished with three goals and an assist. Very impressive display from him.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, from a team that is not going to have Shane Simpson, I did see a goal from Tagliaferri. He seemed to be wearing arm pads, so I'm happy for him. And I think, you know, that looking at UNC, do you learn a lot from this game? I don't think so. Because we know UMBC is being rebuilt, right? They're kind of being rebuilt from the ground up. They're kind of not fixing that culture, but adjusting that culture. And that doesn't take one off season. You know, we've said this a bunch of times. It's a process. And they're in the middle of the process. So, again, trust the process.
Trust the process. But one of the takeaways I think we can take from this game is, you know, what players they ran at which lines. It looked like, for the most part, at attack, it was Luke Goldstock, Chris Cloutier, and then Andy Matthews kind of being the ex-initiator for them. He's the sophomore, highly touted recruit. And then the midfield, Timmy Kelly, you know, we thought he would go to X maybe at some points in the season. That could still be a possible route for him, but he played most of the game at midfield. Seemed to do very well. And I really wish this game was streamed because I would love to have seen it, but we can only glean from, you know, that small highlight package that we got from the UNC Athletic Department and then these stats. But like you said, I wouldn't put too much stock into this, you know, besides, you know, what we saw personnel-wise, because Carolina always seems to start the year like this, scoring somewhere between 15 and 20 goals in the first game.
Yeah, and, you know, they're the defending champs. They're you know, they got the target on their back. Everyone's shooting. But the thing is, UNC is also shooting, which is great. Like, it's great to see them come out and put out a long, protracted, multi-goal effort up against anybody in the first game of the season. It's a statement for them on a certain level. I don't know how much we can take away from it other than that, though.
Yeah. But another thing is it does – I feel like, you know, looking at this game, we can kind of glean who was the top contributors. But I don't know if there seems to be a lot of depth on this team just yet, especially at midfield. I mean, we'll see how it pans out. But it seemed that, like, most of their goals were driven through that first midfield line. But so I want to talk about this. I want to pose this question to you, you know, you being a coach. Is it slightly strange that you get a guy in Justin Anderson who comes to campus so late and starts his career as a 20-year-old freshman? Is that unfair, so to speak, maybe?
What's funny is, so when I coached, I actually had a fair amount of like ex-Army and guys that I coached that like went on a tour, like 4-year tour, and came back. So I coached like several 24-year-olds. I coached a 26-year-old. I coached like a bunch of guys age ranges. And it may seem strange, but it's actually better because that person that's older has a little bit more, you know, experience. Has life experience, I should say, and is going to be easier to coach by and large because they've lived a little bit more, you know. And it's not a knock on true freshmen, but like, you know, there's a reason that everyone calls them freshmen. And freshmen are the ones that make you pull your hair out and make it turn gray. You know, that's just the fact of coaching. You got to get used to that. So having a guy like that coming in, having a little bit more maturity than anyone else in his class. Definitely helps. And I don't care if he's carrying water on the bench. He's still helping by having a calming presence, being a little bit older and more experienced.
Yeah, but I think very interesting the takeaway for me is that, you know, this guy spent 2 years in South America away from the game, and he comes back and it just seems to fall in place. There's no skill lost. He was our number two recruit a few years ago, did his thing in South America, and now he's back, and he's really just has hit the ground running. Very interesting to see.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on to the first top 20 matchup of the year. Ugh. And the first big upset of the year.
Man.
Duke versus Air Force on Sunday.
How dumb do I look now? How dumb do I look right now? After I mean, casting a little bit of shade on the Falcons in our previous pod. How dumb do I look?
Slightly dumb. I mean, you are wearing Patriots gear, so.
Oh, that's your one. That's your one.
That was my dig. I get one.
All right, you get one.
But yeah, Air Force once again winners in Durham, 11-10 this time around. Big game for Nick Ruby, 4 goals for him. What were your takeaways from this game?
I mean, I thought Air Force was dead in the water after losing Doug Bouchel. That was my thing because I thought he was, you know, along with Walsh, their best player last year. But you know, seeing that they had a freshman keeper step up and just make a difference in this game.
Yeah. Huge saves.
It's how much can you saves. I mean, how much can you put that to? Like, goalie is the hardest position to play in lacrosse. It really is. Like, mentally, maybe not physically, because, like, you know, there's a lot of fat goalies.
Yeah.
Love for fat goalies a little bit. But mentally, as a freshman, to step in against a team like Duke in your first game and to put up an effort like that, that's like, you know, we're going to slow clap that. That's great. Make me look stupid. Keep doing it. I enjoy it. I'm not one of those people that's like, it's like, oh man, no, I'm going to defend my position no matter what. I'm not in that Skip Bayless school of journalism. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. if you prove me wrong, good for you. Yeah. Good for you.
Definitely. I think the big takeaway for me in this game was the personnel that Duke ran. Guterding, their main dude, still doing his thing. 3 goals, 1 assist for him. I think this, I wouldn't say it was a surprise, but Joey Manown, freshman guy, not only takes Jordan Wolf's role as, you know, the ex-attacker.
Oh, hold on. Time out. Okay. No Jordan Wolf comparisons, man. Just don't.
All right.
Just don't. Fine. Just don't. He's so great.
It took his number too, though. It looked a lot like him a little bit.
All right. Continue.
I know it's not fair to compare a freshman after 60 minutes of sample
to
one of the most clutch players in recent years. So I'll say that's fair. But Manown, 2 goals for him. Looked like he's going to be a presence on that offense throughout the year. Other players to see the field from the freshman class, JT Giles Harris, Riley Walsh, Kevin Quigley, and also a veteran for Duke holding it down, Jack Bruckner, 2 goals, 1 assist. And watching this game, it was just so bizarre. I just didn't understand why Duke wasn't playing better. I mean, you look at the numbers. I know as journalists, we try to look at the numbers and analyze, you know, is this a reason why this team lost? And looking at Duke's numbers, they're just insanely good. 28-12 in ground balls. 17 of 24 on faceoffs. Same amount of turnovers. They did not shoot great. 10 of 37, that's 27%. I think they hit 4 or 5 pipes maybe. But it kind of felt like Duke was just maybe a little unlucky in this game.
All right, so here's the lesson for all you stat nerds out there.
I'm not a big stat
no,
nerd.
No, but you put a little more into stats, I think, than you let on.
That's definitely true.
You put on a little bit more. So here's the thing. If you haven't watched the game, the thing about looking at stats is they're tangible evidence of something that happened in the game. But the concept that all people that have coached and played in a game understand is momentum. Momentum is real. Momentum is not a buzzword that like people use to cover the game. It's a real thing. Yeah. In the moment, it matters the most. But when the game is done, you can't reach back and rediscover it. You know, it doesn't always translate in a broadcast either. You know, yeah. It could be something as simple as a guy missing a shift because he turned his ankle. And like that screws up your entire ride. You know, it's yeah. little tiny things that add up to victories and losses. It's not just goals, assists, ground balls, faceoffs, and saves. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, we talked about this on the previous pod. We really want to go a little deeper and try to find those things in these games and kind of elevate the level of coverage to include those things. When we talk about games. And, you know, again, I fell into the trap of the goalie was sick. The goalie was awesome. Like, we have to talk about the goalie. But also, you know, when you're saying unlucky, I don't really believe in luck. I believe in hustle. Yes. And hustle is an immeasurable quantity, right? People, mm-hmm. coaches, players, everyone uses ground balls as hustle. No. It's how the ground balls happened that's hustle. Mm-hmm. It's picking off the guy, you know, man ball that matters. That's hustle. You know, yeah. taking – like letting your buddy get the GB instead of you getting it when you might not be able to get it. You got to take out the other guy. You got to sacrifice. And I think a lot of that kind of looks like something else when you look at a stat sheet as opposed to watching a game or being there and experiencing the energy of a game. And I think, you know, it didn't seem in what little I saw that Duke – was up for it. Yeah. And if that's, you know, if that comes off as like super negative or too much of a hot take, like too bad. You know, that team needs that. I'll tell you what that team needs right now. They need leadership in between the boxes, period. Like, to me, that seemed glaringly obvious.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny you mentioned that because this is such a team that it looks like so many of their contributors are going to be young guys. And you don't exactly want to put that mantle on a guy who might just be a sophomore. You know, like, do you go to a guy like Jack Bruckner and say, you need to be the guy that leads this team? But he's down at playing at attack a lot.
Have you ever heard of a team that made a freshman a captain?
No.
I have. Okay. I have. And you do that when you have no other choice. Yeah. You do that to send a message. And I think that leadership role, you don't always have to wear, you know, I always said this when I coached, you don't have to wear the C to lead, but you always have to lead. You know what I mean? It just puts a little more pressure on you to be the captain. But when you lose a game like this and it's your opener and you're Duke.
Yeah.
I think, do you ring the alarm bell? No. Do you break some chairs in the locker room? Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. But what you definitely have to do is go back and work on the little things. Not the big picture, not your plays, not your man up, okay? You need to work on GBs, getting your clear right, getting your ride right. Because that's how teams like Duke win games against teams like Air Force.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But that's also how Air Force beat Duke. Is they played and did all the little things in between the boxes much, much better, regardless of what the stats say.
Exactly. And it's funny that you mentioned momentum. And this was definitely a game where momentum was, I thought, very apparent. And to start the game, it was obviously all Air Force. And then Duke went on their little run. And then about the time near the end of the third quarter and the beginning of the fourth was when there just didn't seem to be any – there wasn't so much momentum for Air Force. Not as so much as there was just no momentum for Duke at all, I felt like. And I felt like that's where the game was lost, because from that point onward, they were always just trying to get back into the game. They're trying to recreate the momentum spontaneously, and it just happened a little too late for them.
Yeah, and it's much easier to create momentum when you have leadership and upperclassmen. And Duke just doesn't have that this year. So they need to dig and find someone to take that mantle and lead that team.
I wouldn't say they don't have it this year, but they may not have it right now. And we always talk about this every year, is that, you know, John Donowski kind of like wants to put those kids out there, have their growing pains, and then maybe in May they'll have everything figured out. That doesn't exactly seem like they have everything figured out right now, but cautiously optimistic about all this.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. You're not doom and gloom on Duke.
I mean, Are they gonna have a winning season? Are they gonna crush teams going into the season? Absolutely. They're Duke. You know, they've got so much talent on this team that they're just gonna blow some teams out of the water.
So, you know, who are they gonna mollywop then? Who's their mollywop team? Let's pull up their schedule.
All right.
What are we looking at with them?
I'm not. You really want me to do picks right now?
Yeah. No, I just want to look at what you're saying here, because I'm trying to get past the actual, like, act of saying someone's going to do really well versus, like, why they're going to do really well. Mm-hmm. And I just, like, I don't know how Duke fits in. I mean, what's their schedule look like? They have High Point next. Okay, they're going to mollywop Cleveland State.
Yes, I will say that.
Chances are good that they will do similar things to St. Joe's. Joseph's.
Yes. Possibly Richmond in a revenge game.
Well, they lost the revenge game against Air Force, so we don't know how that's going to go. Yeah. Duke not doing great against the SoCon.
Yeah.
Jacksonville. I mean, listen, look at the back end of their schedule, man.
Yeah.
Like, this
is tough.
It's a torture chamber. You're going away to Syracuse, away to North Carolina, home Notre Dame, home Virginia, home Marquette, home BU. Like,
yeah.
That's
– at least they have their games at home, but – still.
Yeah, but still, I mean, away to Syracuse and North Carolina could, like, really sink your ACC, like, campaign right there. You know, and then you got Notre Dame at home. What happens if they go 0-3 there?
Yeah.
Because with the way this team played in the first game, they are not beating those teams.
Yeah, and the interesting thing was that I was doing the, worst case, best case scenarios. And for me, the worst case for them was to bow out in the first round. And if they don't show out in the ACC, you know, they're already 0-1. They don't show out in the ACC, they might not make the tournament altogether if they don't make that ACC tournament.
Yeah, it's a team that
boost in RPI and SOS.
Yeah, they need to clean it up. And, you know, I think you have a little more faith than I do in their ability to do that. But until someone emerges as in the midfield for me, I think they're going to struggle and maybe possibly struggle mightily.
And personnel-wise, I thought that there was no clear number one guy at midfield. And I think if you're Duke, you need that guy. And I think, you know, going into the season, we wanted it to be Brad Smith. He actually just did not seem to play as much as, you know, one would expect. He got his shots, he got his runs, but like, I thought he would be their Miles Jones, you know, kind of initiating every dodge. And he just was not. It was very complex viewing of this game for me.
Sure. 100%.
Yeah. All right, moving on to another game that I caught on Sunday. A lot of people did not because it was a paid stream. But Ohio State and Furman falling to 0-2 after a 12-6 OSU victory indoors. Big day for Canadians. Johnny Pearson, 4 goals for him, 2 goals for Trey LeClaire, the freshman. Very interesting game for Ohio State, I thought, personnel-wise. They looked, you know, this is a team that, you know, had a poor shooting percentage last year. They really tried to address that in the offseason. They played a lot of box. They worked on their shooting. And from what I saw in this game, it seems like they had cleaned their act up a little bit, you know. They were efficient with their shooting. They played a very box style. I saw a lot of guys favoring one hand who were simply just American players. Very interesting result for Ohio State. Did you catch up on any of this?
I just caught the box score for this, but you know, I think Ohio State's one of my teams to watch. It's much harder to get better at defense than it is to get better at offense. And this, you know, they were in, I believe, 10th in defense last season, and they were all the way down near the 40s or 50s in offense. So the fact that they're doing a little bit better this season, even against a team like Furman, who has a ton of, by the way, we didn't really talk about this in the UVM recap. They had a ton of like little Spitfire guys like flying around the field. Their faceoff guy was really good. You know, so I think it's a really encouraging start for Ohio State. I feel like they could have probably put, you know, 15 up, if they wanted. But just looking at the stats at the end, but, you know, I didn't get to see the game, but just my opinion on guys like that. I think I definitely thought Pearson was up for a big season, and it's good to hear that he's starting off really well.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you look at his physical stature, 6'4", 194. You got to say Canadian guy, midfielder, pretty fast guy too for his height. But definitely a guy who I think is going to be their leading scorer come the end of the season. I just thought he was tremendous in this game. And Trey LeClaire, super impressed with him. He had 2 resounding goals in this game. They both just hit the top corner. And there was just no contest for the goalie. He's like, how am I supposed to stop that? That was the read he got after he let up those goals. He just puts all his weight into it. Tremendous. Another interesting thing about Ohio State was that Colin Shell was their only veteran on attack. He played mostly from the right wing, it seemed. They put Jack Jasinski, a sophomore, in. And they went with another sophomore at attack, and that was an interesting look. You know, I know they lose guys at that position, but to put 2 guys who aren't veterans at that position when you could put maybe a midfielder there was an interesting move, I thought.
Did Austin Fennell see time?
You mean Eric Fennell?
Eric Fennell, sorry.
I did not see him on the field.
That is strange to me.
Yes, and here's another guy along with Ian McKay. You know, like, why isn't he out there? Is it an injury?
And Sam Talco, by the way.
Yeah.
The update on that, by the way, I didn't say it at the end of our Providence BU segment, but Talco is expected to play in BU's next game. It's a accumulation of tiny injuries, from what I am told. So that's that situation. That wasn't a discipline situation or anything. So
yes, but back to Eric Fennell. He was a guy who had a huge fall for Ohio State. I know our publisher Terry Foy went to see them play North Carolina here in Baltimore, and was just blown away by Eric Fennell's play. So for him not to be on the field, definitely a question mark. You know, why isn't he there?
I think very interesting. I feel like absences are the story of the first weekend. I mean, yes, yeah, we had OT games. We had a great time. Trust me, we had a great time. But I think we need to find out why all these guys are just missing time, right?
Yeah. I mean, we know with Sam Talcow that he's got a history of injury. Eric Fennell also has a history of injuries. But that is definitely true. Absences were a little bit of the story for the weekend. Also for me was the amount of great freshmen who had big performances this weekend. Ben French, Canadian for the Catamounts, huge in both comeback victories.
Uh-huh, 100%.
All those guys I mentioned with Duke, Joey Manone. I know we get a lot of flack for focusing on incoming freshmen, but when they can come in and already on the first weekend have a positive impact for their team, you see why we're validated and maybe exposing them so much.
100%. Like, talent is talent, man. Like, yeah. And it's the guys that impact games like that, you see them at the attack position or the offensive midi position. You don't mm-hmm. see them at other positions. And those are the guys that are real outliers that are hard to find. But I feel like guys that can come in that – but one of the reasons these guys do well, by the way, is there's no tape on them. There's yeah. just high school tape. You can't get anything from high school tape. I'm sorry.
High school tape is meaningless.
It doesn't mean anything once you're in a college game because you can just put a guy who can run a 4.640 on a guy in a corner and just shut him out of the game if he's not that good. But what we're finding is that these offensive players are given – more and more chances to impact games and play commanding roles in their offense and delivering. And I think that's that alone gives credence to all the coverage that we do at IL on, you know, incoming freshmen, which is mostly your purview, not mine.
Yeah, it's definitely my wheelhouse. Thank you for pointing that out.
100%.
But
see, I pump you up. I don't just break you down. I pump you up.
We I feel like we have this kind of like sense of animosity between us, but no, we're good friends. Like, we just crap on each other during the show,
and away from it. But yeah, but that's what people do. That's why we have a podcast.
Yeah,
and our podcast has the best rapport.
Yes, we definitely have the best rapport. But so that's really the wrap up for the weekend. Definitely. A memorable one, so to speak. I'm really looking forward to next weekend. I'm going to see my Maryland Terrapins finally play a game against Navy.
Oh.
But speaking of Navy, tomorrow night, the first big game of the season.
Quote, unquote, big game, yes.
Hopkins hosting Navy.
Are we making a pick? Let's make a pick.
I was going to like shoot some questions off you.
All right, go for it.
Go for it.
I'm ready.
Do you think Hopkins struggles initially on defense tomorrow night?
No, because Navy will struggle more on offense.
Okay, that's definitely a fair point. With no Casey Reese, whew, no shooter. Another thing.
Go.
What were you going to say?
Nope, you go ahead.
Do you see Gerald Logan and Brock Turnbull both getting time in cage tomorrow night?
Man.
Do you think he's testing the waters for both teams? For both players, I mean?
I think he's probably – I think the perception that they're just going to hand that to Logan is wrong. But mm-hmm. I also think that they should hand it to him. Yeah. You know, I think he's overall – his body of work just speaks for itself, man. I mean, he's an excellent goaltender with more experience than anyone else on that team. So I don't know how you start the game without him in there.
Yeah, I mean, just – talking to people who've seen Hopkins' scrimmages, reading a bunch of banter on the internet, it seems that everybody says that the logical conclusion is to start Gerald Logan. You know, he's going to be your guy down the road. Is he going to be your guy maybe in February? Do you show a little service to Brock Turnbull, give him his chance to make a statement in-game? Probably. Be interesting to see what they do at the goalie position tomorrow night. And final question for you. Well, We can bounce this off each other a little bit, but what do you think are the keys to offense tomorrow night for Hopkins? Getting past that Navy D.
I mean, you know, run twos with Stamick behind the cage, man. Make Navy react. That's kind of what – not mine, like, oh, I would do that, but I feel like that's the obvious kind of move, right? Is pull the defender out and see how much you can get the defense to shift. Hopkins is not a one-on-one dodging team. You know, they need to move the ball, they need to draw slides, and they need to stick their shots against the Navy team, who has a, by the way, has a great defense. So I think, you know, we're going to see pretty early if the Hopkins O is for real. And I think they're going to manufacture their own chances. And my pick in this game is definitely Hopkins by like 4 goals.
Yeah, I'm feeling a 12-8 kind of score, maybe.
Yeah, I was thinking like 10-6, but yeah.
So I feel like Navy's defense is good enough to limit them, but there will come a point where they're going to need to catch up so bad that the game's going to get away from them.
Yeah, and that's tough. You know, I think the other possibility is that, you know, the defense does take over the game for Navy, and they put it on that weakened Hopkins defense, and we could see a total flip of that action. So, I don't think this one's going to OT, man. I think someone's offense is gonna go out and expose the other guy's defense, and that's gonna be it. I don't think it's gonna be a shootout at all, not between these two teams.
Interesting, because I feel like thinking about the Brown Navy game last year, Navy was able to go toe to toe with a high powered team, but this time around, with guys they lose, I don't know. I don't see it happening, particularly in the early season. Even though my dad always told me this, player at North Carolina back in the 80s, you never want to play a service academy in the early season. That was proven yesterday with Air Force beating Duke. But Navy always, you know, they always bring it early in the season. They're going to try to outrun you. They're going to try to out-physical you in the middle of the field. They're going to try to make it about, you know, athleticism and being in shape. And it'll be interesting to see how Hopkins responds. You know, last year, they went down to Annapolis, and it was a tight game.
Yeah, thanks to the refs, it was a really tight game.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to get in trouble for saying that, but whatever, I don't care.
But yeah, I'm going to take a 4-goal difference, I think, for Hopkins. I just think, you know, you hate me for my Hopkins pick, but I think I look at Hopkins, I see so many midfielders who could just be a threat for them. They're just going to run guys at you. You know, you get with the first line with Connor Reed. He's a stellar athlete. You get Joel Tinney. He's a stellar athlete. Great shooter. And then you get into the deep end. Con Cannon, Sapinski. These guys are tremendous dodgers. And if Chris Fennell goes against Shaq Stamick and eliminates him, there's so many other guys who can, you know, really put the hurdle on for Hopkins.
Right. I think one of the things –
I just think it's a matchup nightmare.
Well, I mean, you know, you're going to miss – everyone kind of focuses on what they're missing. What they do have is depth, you're right, on offense. And I think they also have an abundance of playmakers. And that's why I would pick them to do well against teams like Navy that are reliant on their defense and, you know, little things to win them games. I just think Hopkins' talent is so high on offense. Their defense is a complete unknown, man. It's a complete unknown with all the injuries they have back there. And we're going to see what's what with that real quick in this game.
Yeah, definitely true. I mean, losing Foley, it's a big loss for them. Let's be real. You know, he was a young guy who they were looking to build their program around, you know, going in the future. Now all you got, the only known commodity you have at defense now is Nick Fields. And we saw kind of like last year that wasn't that great for them. You know, 58th in scoring is not ideal for them. So,
yeah,
definitely the microscope, I think, tomorrow, win or lose, is on Hopkins' defense a little bit.
100% agree. 100% agree.
We know Bobby Benson's going to get things clicking with, you know, Shaq Stamick behind the cage, all those athletes. So the defense is definitely under the microscope.
I would love to see Hopkins run a real pairs offense. I would just love to see it. With that personnel, I mean, you're kind of splitting the field into three parts, behind the cage, kind of in front of the cage in the crease area, and then up top for Dodgers. I just think a 2-2-2 with that mix of players is, like, lethal. And the thing is about that set, that's the hardest set to run on lacrosse, I think.
Yeah.
Is because the spacing, you can screw up the spacing in a deuces set so badly. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, like you said, you know, Benson knows what he's doing there. And hopefully he just kind of lets his more creative players be creative. That's always what I want to see from any team, especially Hopkins.
All right, so before we close out this podcast, want to get your thoughts a little bit on two games coming up this Saturday, and that's Maryland and Navy, and then also Virginia and Loyola. Virginia and Loyola, their season opener. You going to say something?
Nope.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question. What do you think about Navy? Do they have a shot to beat Maryland? It's at Navy. I was actually talking to somebody involved with the Maryland program. They went up to their scrimmage at Penn, and they said, you know, they didn't play as good as they thought they would. So should be Maryland be a little worried?
No.
No?
No, I think – listen, we talk about this all weekend. Maryland, this is the season of Maryland as the favorite to win the championship, right? Especially with Zach Miller out. I feel like that's the feeling we're all getting. But my feeling – is that they're going to do really well throughout the season. They're going to win a ton of games. They're going to win a lot of games. And any game they lose is going to be very tight because they control games. That's what Maryland does. And now they have the talent. You know, yes, they lost their entire midfield. Yes, that happened. Yes, they lost their star goalie. But I feel like this team just has a system in place. And you know, I love teams with systems. Maybe you've heard of the Super Bowl champions, the New England Patriots, running a system. Well, guess what? Brady's a system quarterback. Guess what? Systems work. Philosophies work. Okay? And Maryland's philosophy and system is to control the game, take possession shots, fight the stall clock, and grind teams into the ground.
Yeah.
And I, you know, that's going to work early in the season a lot. That's going to be tougher to maintain as you go further into the season, and you're going to have to add some wrinkles and offenses and zone looks into kind of the big crock pot they're stirring over there. But
crock pot.
I think the overwhelming kind of sense of this team is that, you know, they're going to be dominant in a lot of games. Yeah. And I feel like this playing Navy, who could possibly be 0-1 at this point or 1-0, is a big statement for them. And I think they're going to control the game like they always do, and they're going to pull it out.
Okay. Quick aside, real quick, but apologies in advance to all my Maryland homies listening, but watching that Super Bowl last night, the two drives where the Falcons were deep in Patriots territories, and one, they took the sack, and then they got the fumble. I got flashbacks to that moment in time in the national championship game when Maryland was up by 2 with 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. And I was like, I've seen this before.
The colors probably didn't help either, right?
No.
Probably brought back that memory. I don't particularly enjoy the way that Maryland plays. I like free-flowing, high-scoring lacrosse. Call me un-American if you must. I love it.
You're definitely right. Maryland has a system, and there's a process to winning games for them. And it may suck the life out of the game. It may make it, you know, very high percentage, you know, favoring high percentage stuff like that. But it works, you know. Tillman's gotten to, you know, so many national championships games with that system, with a different set of characters every year. So it's obviously working.
And they have Rambo.
Yeah, and they just don't have the hardware to show it just yet.
Not yet.
Final game before we move on, Virginia and Loyola.
I love Loyola in this game, man. I think Loyola, my two dark horses, I mean, Loyola's not even a dark horse, but... Yeah.
Nobody is sleeping on Loyola.
No one's sleeping on Loyola, but, you know, this is a wake up for them. You know, they need to, I feel like they need to trounce UVA. That's what they need to do. Will they do that? I don't know. But I feel like, you know, the Greyhounds are clearly the favorite to win the Patriot League. Get them into that national championship, and then everyone else should be scared, because this is a team that is going to play faster, that is going to control the game with all manner of offense. Pat Spencer is the ultimate surgeon. You know, he's just going to pick you apart, take out your liver, show it to you before you die. You know, he's that, they have that player. You know, it's funny. Yeah. We were talking kind of during the weekend, like, who are all these like star players and Tour-ton guys? There are teams that just don't have that guy this year. Like we were talking about Duke earlier. Duke doesn't have that guy. They don't have that guy. Does UNC have that guy? I don't know. Maybe. You know, we'll see. I think when you have a team like Loyola and you know where your bread is buttered, you know you have the guy, and it's Pat Spencer. And Pat Spencer, you know, people are I think it's flipped now where people are like saying he's overrated because he's been rated so much. He's kind of past that mountaintop. I don't think so. I think he's a tremendous player. He's the guy for that team. And I think he's going to take them to great places, and they're going to win the Patriot League in a walk.
Okay. My thinking on this game is that Loyola will win, but it will be within 3 goals. I think Virginia is going to give their best effort in this game. I'm predicting somewhere along the line of like a 12-10, 13-11 finish.
Oh.
Win for Loyola.
That's kind of surprising, I guess. But, you know, that's how we like to end the podcast, with a little surprise, a little caveat for you guys, a little nugget for you to chew on until you get to the next one.
Yes, and we're going to stick to, I think, early releases in the week, Monday or Tuesday. You've obviously probably seen some other podcast ventures going on around the office. We appreciate everybody who listens to us. And we cannot wait to discuss next weekend's game, this time next week. So for everybody who listened in today, thank you so much. We will see you next week.
Thanks, guys. Inside Lacrosse Podcast.